Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, why did the bald guy cut holes in his pocket?
Why?
So he could run his fingers through his hair.
Oh! Mike always bringing it up a
notch. Oh, my God.
I want to be his barber.
Hey, man. Welcome to the Big Bad Broadcast, dude.
Thank you, Tommy Chong, and welcome to the Big Bad Broadcast. I'm here with Mike Grief. Craig Mitchell.
Hi.
My name is John Ferrantino, and we have a special guest today who wrote a book on baby boomers, and Craig is going to introduce him, and we are going to talk about baby boomers.
Wow. All right. Very cool.
Are we introducing him now?
Yeah. No. John, you said introduce him, but we're going to do it later.
Okay, I think we should introduce him now. He's actually written more than just one book. He's written two. His first book was called The World is Your Litter Box, which is a humorous cat book, which I love because I have a cat named Andy who's pretty humorous. And his current book is not really about boomers, but it's about growing up in the boomer situation. It's called American Boomer by Steve Fisher, and it's about him growing up. And he's an author. He's a musician.
I see you really prepared this intro, Craig. Really good. Good job, man.
He's like a woodland dove.
I'm glad to see this is the highest paid guy on the show. You know, really worked every nickel, Craig.
What do you want? What do you want to say? Oh, here's a guy with the book. What do you want to say?
Introduce him. Say he's our new co-host.
Okay. Here's author musician Steve Fisher, our new co-host. Yay! Yeah. Bring him on in. Steve.
Welcome, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Can you hear me there?
Oh, we can hear you.
Okay. Well, that was a great intro. That was possibly the best intro I've ever had. So
see? Somebody appreciates me.
You're picking on Craig unnecessarily here.
Thank you. That's the story of my life, Steve. Yeah. Story of my life.
I hear you.
Yes. He would feel unloved if I didn't mess with him, so.
No, I would feel good, I said, if you didn't mess with him. Yeah, that's what I said. You're good.
So what exactly is the age limit for baby boomers? There's always the big controversy. I'm a boomer. I'm not a boomer.
Yeah. I think the official age group is from 1946 to 64. If you're born in those.
You just made it, Mike.
Yeah, I just made it. I'm a 63.
Well, you're close enough. That's pretty good.
I'm on the edge of the edge. I'm a edge boomer.
I'm a front line. I was born in 1946, so I just turned 77. So I'm right at the front of it.
And I'm 70, and I'm 72. So I'm right in there.
Wow, I didn't know I was working with these old guys, man. Craig, we gotta.
I know. Look, I have paramedics standing by here in case.
Me too. They're gonna resuscitate my career.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, Mike. Neither one of them look even close to their age, so they're doing something right.
Craig, stop kissing up. They look totally there. No,
John pays me. Of course I'm going to kiss up.
Well, I'm glad this isn't going to be actually on air. A video is what I'm trying to say, because I would have had to spend about 3 hours plastering my face with, you cover all the wrinkles and everything.
Yeah, everything on my face here is silly putty, just so you know. Mm-hmm. I don't look anything like this.
Finally, it comes out.
So it came out a long time ago. So the book is about growing up as a baby boomer. I hit the edge of it. So like, it's about all the stuff you had to deal with through the ages of the boomer age.
I mean, it's a memoir, so it's kind of, it's got a little bit of childhood stuff, and then it goes up through, my music career. And then, from that, I got, I don't want to give too much away, but I got into radio and then record production. Then finally started writing, which is something I've always wanted to do. So I kind of ended up where I wanted to be anyway. But there, there were highs and lows along the way. And I think that's kind of what's in the book, just the whole
experience. I always can tell a baby boomer, did you ever get a lawn dart in your foot? That's how you know a baby boomer.
I think, what, tell me, refresh my memory.
They were like these huge dart, like they were so dangerous. They were deadly. I think they outlawed them in what? A certain,
they outlawed it everywhere. It was a big dart with a big spike on it.
Yeah, you had to throw it into a hoop.
3 pounds and you threw it into a hoop.
I don't think so, actually.
Well,
I'm a little bit younger than him, and I think that came out at the very end of our baby boomer. I think the biggest memory as a baby boomer is this time of year when you were a kid, where every commercial on TV was for a toy that you wanted. Exactly. That they made it look so good, and when you got it, it was crap.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I was going to say my test for baby boomers was: did you ever get a packet of Sea Monkeys?
I remember those.
Yeah, they always had. They were a family sitting at a dinner table underwater, and you're like, "This is like the coolest family."
And they were brine shrimp that did nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. That you feed to your fish when you realize what a piece of shit you just bought. You throw it into the fish tank and let them eat it. Oh, you're talking about the back of the comic book stuff.
Yes. Right? Well, that's
they were advertised on like comic books and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the big thing was every kid had to have X-ray specs.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
X-ray specs. I don't know if you ever looked at them. X-ray specs were, because I was the magic guy, so I had to have anything that was magic-y. And every boy bought them to
look through a girl's skirt.
Showed, you're looking at your hands.
Not every boy.
Bones, and then looking through women's clothes. Mm-hmm. Craig didn't necessarily see that.
No.
But that's what they were for. And when you looked at it, all they were was a pair of rubber, like black glasses, and then there was a piece of cardboard in them that said X-ray with like little X-ray things with a little, like a hole puncher punched out of the middle. And then behind that was a feather. Ooh. And when you look through it, it distorted everything. They had about as much X-ray power as looking up.
But it was a great illusion. It really looked like you could see your bones in your hand and stuff. I remember that.
Must have smoked a lot of weed, man.
It didn't look really.
Like any, didn't look like anything.
That's true. If you
look like shadows.
You
can
see anything.
I read an excerpt from your book called The Record, and the thing that struck me first of all about your writing is even though I was born in 1960, I'm really familiar with all the accoutrements of being a boomer, I guess you would say, but the way you described, walking to your car and your grandparents' Cadillac was there with the fins. And, I just could picture myself walking down my street when I was like 5, 6 years old, seeing those classic cars. And you kind of transported me right back to that. I mean, that's what I like. If you're a boomer, you're going to love the imagery that you put in your book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Craig. That's nice. Yeah, that was, I think we talked about that on the phone the other day. It's actually one of my favorite stories in the book, Record Kid, because I was just a record hound when I was a child. I mean, I'd buy 45s and, it expresses my really love for music from an early age and kind of what led me into being a musician and playing the guitar and all that. So it's all kind of in the first story, but I just, I love to get like 45s. I feel sorry for kids today that don't have that thrill of
today it's a whole different meaning. Back then 45 was you got a record, and today if you got a 45 you get a record.
Yeah,
nice, well done. Yeah. Like
I remember
one. Yeah. I like that.
I remember were, being...
just, I'm sorry Jeff
no
just,
no I was just,
you know, holding a little being... just getting this little gem with the label and the grooves and everything
and the little like,
well, that little disc little, that went in the center.
Yeah, the little plastic thing that looked like it looked, yeah.
I remember being in sixth grade, and we used to go to parties, and on Friday, all the new songs came out, and I remember going to the candy store on my corner, buying a 45, and then you had like a little box that you kept your 45 in.
Oh, yeah,
it was like a little album like yes. a little 45.
I remember those, yeah.
And then
it had music notes on the outside of it.
And you put your name on it in like some kind of marker because you took it to the party and you
did it come with a thermos, John?
No, it didn't come with a thermos. But the big exciting thing was when you bought 45 records, if you had one that had like a double-sided hit, that was like a big thing. That was like a bonus. You got two records for one, you know.
I got in so much trouble because not Steve's got me on 45s. But my sister had that box of, you know, that exact box you open up and you could go through all the 45. I would listen to all her 45s because I was like four or five. I guess I would wreck them. But I sat for hours in her bedroom listening to the Watusi on 45. Wah, 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 Watusi. And and to this day, I still
think. Dance of
getting. I remember buying a 45 of the Batman theme song. The whole record was... Batman. That's it.
The Beach Boys always had a lot of double hits.
Yep. You know, Chuck Berry was great too. When I was, I started buying records. I mean, I was like in, I think, fourth, fifth grade. I mean, really young. And Chuck Berry, like Johnny B. Good, had Around and Around on the flip side. I mean, wow. You only got your 89 cents worth on that one. Buddy Holly had a lot of two-sided hits.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those guys back then,
I definitely appreciate about the boomer age. It's free technology, all this modern technology. So if you wanted to learn something like you say, you're a musician and play guitar, you had to actually go and learn. And, you know, today they have all these apps that you had to work really hard. It's like, you know, we had to go to the encyclopedia to learn something. Today they just Google it. So there's no information in the kids' heads anymore. Because it doesn't have to be. They Google it. We had to actually learn things, you know.
Well, it's true. As you'll see in the book, I was really into the Kingston Trio. I mean, I heard them when I was, I think I was at camp. I was overnight camp, which was like.
Get on your head, Tom Dooley.
Yeah. But I heard that at the time I went there, most of the counselors were college kids. And the Kingston Trio was really popular with college kids. Hugely popular. They're kind of forgotten today, but. These guys were really, really popular. And I just was kind of blown away by them. And that's what kind of inspired me to play the guitar. And I just taught myself, basically. I just got a chord book and a Kingston Trio song book. And I was kind of on my way. So that's all in the book, though.
Have you recorded anything that sold? Or, I mean, would we know any of your music?
No, unfortunately not. I came really close a couple of times. I don't want to give too much away, but I had a couple of grabs at the brass ring with music. But I did on my, I put together on my own, I recorded a song called Canada, which is pretty well covered in the book. It's an anti-war song. It was written in like 1968. And, I put it on the website, on my website. It's an acetate, an old, like 50-year-old acetate mono. So it's not, the sound is not that great, but if you want to check it out, but it's basically the theme is it's sung in the voice of a guy who's going to Canada for the last time. He's leaving home. And,
wow.
Yeah. That's like the Vietnam era. I still get Vietnam flashbacks about that bus ride to Canada.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I had friends that went to Canada, and then when they could come back, they refused.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I would have no problem about going about that whole Vietnam thing. I mean, I probably would have been a Canadian citizen right now.
It's tough though, because you know at that time, if you left, you couldn't come back, and that's a big deal. I mean, you think you're leaving your home and your family and all that.
Yeah,
that's kind of what the song expresses. You know, just kind of. Feeling of what this guy's thinking as he's going.
Were you in that first? Were you in the first draft?
No, I actually, fortunately, I got out of it. I actually had to go in, and I got out of it. I got drafted in 1968. But I have a bad left eye. I've had it this way since birth. And at the time, they were taking, you know, everybody that could.
I was in the 68 draft.
Yeah.
So that was the first. That was the first year they had the draft numbers. So the first draft numbers was everybody from 28 years old to 18, since they had never done the draft before. And I got like number 335 out of 365.
Were you nervous? Did you think you were gonna have to go?
It was the worst night of my life, man.
You watch it on TV. Totally. You watch it through your eyes. I remember watching that.
I watched with all my buddies and my one friend who had just gotten out of the Navy. He had just gotten out because he had gotten hurt. And he was like, come on, pick my name. I can't go back. Pick my name. And they picked him as number one, September 14th. Wow. I'll never forget it. But all my friends, none of us got under 239 or something.
Yes, like both my brothers beat it on the thing. Actually, yeah, I mean, but they were taking everybody. And I'm like legally blind in my left eye. I've been this way since birth. And, you know, I had optometrist letters saying my vision was below military standard. They still took me. But so I had to go in. I was in boot camp. And then I was sent, which was, you know, this is in pretty, you know, it was an interesting experience. Let me put it that way. But then after that, I was a doctor who was sympathetic, basically wrote me a medical discharge when I got out. So, but that happened a lot because the draft boards, they had quotas. So they were taking everybody, not a lot, but there were a lot of people that when they got to in, they actually got cut loose because, you know, they think, well, this guy can't.
I had a friend that was 27 years old and he got drafted. So they sent the letter. He sent the letter to our friend in Hawaii, who then sent it to our friend in California, who sent it to someone. They sent this letter around for 1 year, and then he went in there, and he was like 28 or 29. They couldn't take him.
Hey, that's like, a song.
He goes, I move around a lot, you know.
I wrote a song about my that Vietnam era. It's called Bone Spurs. Bonesburg.
I think somebody we all know may have heard that one. Yeah. You know, I was only like 7 or 8, but I remember we sat in our den watching that, and my brother was draft age, and his birthday came up like 33rd, and my mom went out of her effing mind. I mean, screaming.
It was terrible. And they used like a bingo thing.
Yeah. And what that. She wrote letters for weeks. And I mean, to senators. And she got my brother, what do you call it, a dispensation? Because he was going to college.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that people wouldn't understand today, because there hasn't been a draft since. So it's like, yes, there's been war. There's been all kinds of stuff, but there hasn't been this thing where it's like, whether you want to go or not, man, you get like, you know, it's, I don't think people today would understand.
It's like the Hunger Games. Yeah. It's like the Hunger Games, man. You know,
it's such a different kind of mindset that you guys, like, I'll say I was kind of young, but it's such a different mindset. Like you say, John, that affects the way you develop, the way you come, you know, it's got to affect everything in your life, that fear that I may have to go off.
It was
a
book. It was a Burke book that circulated in the 60s, and it was really like an anti-war book, and it was 101 ways to beat the draft. I know you remember that book, and they were hysterical. You know, I mean,
were any of them actually legit?
Yeah, like curl up your ass and disappear for 5 years. You know?
my father was in World War II, and he told me how my Uncle Steve got out of the draft. You know, back in the, I don't think they have it today.
It involved Chauncey Howell.
It did not. What it was is he took the plastic wrap off a pack of cigarettes before you go in for your physical, and you swallow it, and apparently it appears like there's something on your lung because it doesn't go, and he got out of it because they said, oh, there's something strange on your lung. They gave him a 4F.
He had before and he died the next day.
He did die the next day because he smoked a whole bunch of.
I had a cool book. I had a book how to live back from that era. It was called How to Live Free in America. It was kind of hippie thing, and my favorite thing was you get two guys and people and you go into a restaurant and one guy just sits and he orders coffee and the other guy orders a full meal, and then they switch checks. So the guy who ate the full meal sneaks out and pays for coffee, you know, and then the other guy goes up and he's got this. He just had coffee. He's got a check for you. Come on, is it
bacon?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, when you say it about World War II, the big difference between World War II and Vietnam was it was everyone. Well, first of all, people wanted to go and fight for the country.
Right.
It wasn't a war. That was a protest. But the big thing was you got. So after World War II, they thought they learned a lesson. And the lesson was, you know, if you're with a troop and you're with the same guys for 10 months and then somebody gets killed, everybody mourns. So in Vietnam, they decided what they were going to do. They weren't going to do that. Everyone was in at a different time. The thinking being, well, if Joe Blow gets shot, he's only been here for 3 days. It's not going to affect everybody. But the problem was there was no commander, you know, there was no feeling of like, you know, like when you were leaving, you felt guilty because you knew the job now. And now they're pulling you out and putting somebody in your spot that doesn't know what they're doing. And there was a guilt feelings. It was, and nobody, and in World War II, everyone came home together that was alive and they kind of detoxed together and kind of went back. Yeah. Where in Vietnam, you were in the jungle on Thursday.
Well,
and Saturday morning, you're walking down the street in LA. You know,
well, like you say, in World War II, there was this unity. So there was never this, you know, those soldiers came home and they were heroes and there was, you know, love, acceptance. And they didn't have the kind of healing that we have today, but they healed the best they could. The, you know, when the Vietnam guys came home, it was a whole different story and the country was still divided. It was still, you know, the kind of like conservatives against the liberals back then. And it was a war just like now in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So, Steve, how long were you a radio disc jockey or DJ?
For 2 years.
Where was San Francisco?
It was in a station called K101 in San Francisco. It kind of, again, this is in the book, but I just, after, you know, I kind of realized I wasn't going to be the next Bob Dylan or whatever, however you want to look at it. I was kind of lost because I thought, I mean, from a very young age, I really thought, you know, it was going to happen. I was going to be a musician. It came very close. I was just really driven. And so I had to make a decision. I just thought, I mean, I had no real marketable skills, but I did know music and I had a reasonable voice. And I just thought, I'm going to get into radio. I was when I made the decision, I was in Amsterdam on acid talking to this girl that I met there that talked me into taking a half a tab of acid with her.
And if sure was a girl, it could have been a fire hydrant.
Yeah, well, she no, it was kind of, you know, anyway. I just kind of made the decision. And then when I went back, I kind of worked at getting into it and it, you know, it all came together. But it was an interesting experience for sure. And that's in the book too. There's a book called Radio Days in the book.
Right. Well, you seem to have a voice like for smooth jazz, kind of like, this is Steve Fisher of a smooth jazz.
You know, I kind of, my wife teases me because, you know, I can kind of comfort her cats with my soothing DJ voice. You know, they like that. But I was in, well, the first couple of stations I worked for, there were small stations in Carmel, which was really fun. And they were album rock stations, like we all listened to back then. So you kind of had the, you know, you weren't like a screamer or anything. And then when I got to K101, it was also pretty mellow. You didn't really, you know, wasn't what they call like top 40 radio where you guys are just what we used to call screamers. So, you know, it was an interesting experience. I did the all night shift and very interesting experience. You know, when you're
I never DJed, but I love radio. I mean, I remember doing interviews and things and doing radio shows. There's something really cool. It was almost like the podcast of its day, but there was something really cool about sitting in a room with other guys and just have those headphones on and you're just so locked into whoever you're with or the show or whatever it is. Right. And everything else just gets totally zoned out. I used to love that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting experience. We played music, so it's primarily, you know, you play four songs and then talk a little bit, but it's, you know, when you think that being on the air, I mean, I thought, you know, when I was in high school, listening to the radio, I was parked with, you know, some girlfriend up in the eucalyptus groves at Stanford outside of Palo Alto. And music is playing and a lot of things, you know, you remember those things and associate certain songs with that. And when you're the guy on the radio playing it, sometimes you think, wow, I wonder who's listening to this and how it's affecting them and that kind of thing. How many children were maybe conceived while they were listening to me on the radio, that kind of thing. It's kind of awesome when you think about it.
That's cool. It's cool that you remember all that stuff, that you can write it down. It's like I was a bit of a partaker of things that are illegal and do not remember most of, like they say, if you remember the 60s, you aren't there. Yeah. I don't remember the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and only part of the 90s, you know, so.
I agree. I mean, I took my share of psychedelics. I'm still a pothead, if truth be told, you know, from way back when. But, you know, nothing much has changed. But I do have a pretty good memory. Other people have asked me about that. And, I mean, you know, I might not be able to remember what I had for breakfast today, but I can remember stuff that happened in the 60s or, you know, kind of interesting. I
have a friend of mine that still trips. Mm-hmm. And he's 73, and basically he has no memory. and I always kid him about him. I go, "You don't remember when we did this?" He goes, "Do I know you?"
That is a problem.
But he did call me recently because we had a friend of ours that was very cool, and he called me up and said, "Let me ask you a question because I'm tripping." And I go, "What?" He goes, "Was our friend John Levy the coolest guy that we ever knew?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "He was like our Fonzie, right?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, no, I'm so depressed. That makes you Ralph and me Potsy." And I go,
"That's when you're on acid, things, you think of strange things."
Well, Steve, I got to tell you, man, you know, your book is really worthwhile. You know, even it doesn't matter where you were born on the boomer spectrum. I'm 1960, John's earlier, Mike 64. You really bring us back into 63. You bring us back into that whole.
Don't make me younger than I am, man.
I won't. And I want to thank you for taking the time to be in on our show today. And I just want to remind everybody, I mean, your book is everywhere. It's got, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, but you can also go to your website, which is AmericanBoomerBook.com, right?
AmericanBoomerBook.com, correct?
Right, and you can get it there. And plus, you have the other book, you know, I had the name before about cats.
About cats.
The World is Your Litter Box.
Which is a great title, by the way.
For cats.
Love that name.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, you expand on all these stories, and they go on the whole trip of of your life there. So we want to thank you for coming on today. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Great.
It was awesome.
All right, Steve. Nice, have a great holiday. Nice.
Thanks, you guys too.
All right, take care.
All right, take care.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Cool. Boomer. The boomeration. The enumeration of a boomeration.
And that's how we're stuck with the Big Bad Broadcast name, because we used to be the bitchin' baby boomers.
We're too cheap to fucking spend $3 and get a new name.
We have the BBB.com for like 6 years.
We have Matt Napo to thank for that too, by the way.
I was like, John, it cost 42 cents to get a new website. He's like, "I don't think we should spend it. I don't know."
No, I told you
it was 7 years we have the BBB.com.
No, I'm just messing with you. I know.
No, to tell you, I told Steve in the pre-interview that, you know, we had Matt Napo on, and he goes, "Yeah, you know, big bitchin' baby boomers." He goes, "That's a limits your audience," and took it really seriously, so we changed it. Then we had him on again. He's like, "You know, I was only kidding."
No, but
he changed the name.
He's not kidding. I mean, my son told us the same thing, and that's what he does for a living. Data.
Yeah, but your son's not Matt Napo.
Well, listen, if we really wanted to attract an audience, we should just call the show, you know, Tits and Kittens.
We should have called it Joe Regain.
The Joe Rogan.
That John wanted to call it.
You know, you get a bunch of people that can't spell Rogan.
I don't know if we want that kind of audience, though, John. Yeah. I think I want people that aren't hooked to an oxygen tank.
We would get like Robert Downey Jr. calling us. "Have I been on your show?" "Yeah, come on. It's all right."
Better than Morton Downey Jr.
That would be John's territory when he does a seance, Morton Downey Jr.
So what's going on? What's new? What's exciting?
I saw a clip on TikTok. I know we don't talk about Trump. That was Trump giving a Christmas message.
Oh, no.
That was hilarious.
Was it like, "It's Christmas, send me money"?
No, he's talking about, he goes, "You know, Merry Christmas. I said it. I said the words Merry Christmas. I want you to take note. I didn't say Happy Holidays. Right. And he goes, no, big thing. And then he goes, and he starts talking about Bethlehem. And he goes, you know, Mary comes to Bethlehem. She's pregnant, you know. And let me tell you something. She's not very hot.
What? Not a 10.
Definitely what? Not a very hot.
Craig, come on, admit it. She's not. She wasn't a 10. Come on. We've seen the.
Yeah, you got, she wasn't.
We've seen the paintings.
Maybe she was a Bethlehem 8.
He didn't say that.
Yeah, he did. He goes, maybe she was a Bethlehem 8.
There you go.
Really
drinking the Virgin Mary. No,
you know really what? Drunk. You know what? Listen, when they went to Bethlehem, let's tell the truth. They weren't sending their best.
Yeah, that's what he said. He goes, you know, and Joseph and Mary, they had to come to Bethlehem, you know, illegally.
Illegally.
You know, he goes, Joseph and Mary came to Bethlehem illegally. Just so that they could have a, what do they call it when you have a child in another country?
Like, oh, an anchor baby? Yeah.
Just so they could have an anchor baby.
What do they call it? They call it escaping your responsibility when you have a baby in another country.
It's called having fun overseas. That's what they call it.
It's anchor called your baby, your baby mama. Baby. She don't live here no more.
It's calling European condoms suck. That's what
that's
it's
right.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, man. That's a nice segue.
Ring the bell, John.
When I was in Alaska.
Condoms are all gay.
What does Alaska got to do with condoms? Here we go. Let's hear this.
Let me tell you. So when I was in, they have two museums. One in Skagway and one in Juneau.
Wait. Skagway?
What?
Skagway. Mike and I both stopped on a dime.
There's no place Skagway. Called Skagway.
Yes, Skagway. Skagway was the first gold town.
Skagway.
Yeah.
Well, they took their time in naming shit.
Is it next to Skankway? Skagway. It's right next. All right. To
Well, let me educate you both. Okay? So Skagway was the first town once you went over the mountain of the gold. Right. To get there. So they decided that to make it over this mountain, you had to buy this backpack that was 60 pounds with survival gear because people couldn't make it over into Skagway. Right. And what they would do is most people, because the backpack weighed 60 pounds, couldn't make it up the mountain and would die. Then they would just go pick up the backpacks and resell them.
People had no problem getting to Skagway. But
anyway, they had in these towns, these first gold rush towns, they had whorehouses. And in the whorehouses are now museums.
Okay. The whorehouses are museums?
Oh, it was Skankway.
So they have, like, the downstairs, they had, like, you know, the girls and the bar and all this stuff. And then upstairs, they had these little bedrooms. And did you know that back then they used to use condoms and they were made out of silk? And then they'd have to rewash them.
Really? Wouldn't they be a little leaky?
I don't know. I don't think
I know so. They used to make them out of real lambskin. I remember that, but
I want
to
meet the person.
Yeah, but the lamb was still alive.
It was still alive.
That was funny, man.
I'd like you to meet my girlfriend,
Barbie.
But no, seriously, they used to make them out of silk.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's really cool when you go there, right?
So then you use it as a necktie after you were done with it.
You see, they had a little, like, there'd be like a loose floorboard.
Hey John, and nice scarf. Like, Is that stained with something? Yeah.
You guys don't want to learn. Yeah. They have like a loose floorboard, and then they would have it open, and inside there would be like gold that fell out of these guys' pockets, like gold.
Right.
Where they would find it in the bed and like stash it to keep it from the owner of the.
This would make a great movie.
It's really cool.
I think this is where he got it.
Listen to this. I took a walk in Skagway once in the woods.
Yeah.
And I was walking through the woods, and this is a God's honest truth. And I was about a half mile into my walk through the woods, and there in the woods was a piece of track with a locomotive on it, like an abandoned locomotive with a big snowplow on the front of it. So I guess that apparently one time a train must have gone through there.
That was in your walk in Skagway.
What are you eating? Share your food with everybody. Mike's eating. He's not sharing his food. I'm getting mad.
I was walking through Skagway one day when I needed a silk condom to play.
Nice. I dropped my gold in a floorboard in the inn, I guess.
And went along my merry way.
There you go. That's live. You can't that's live and unedited.
That's right. You thought it was cool. You thought it was cool when Graham Nash played us an original song on his show. This was an original.
What's Nate? What's next? Limericks for us? Because we should do that. That'd be good.
Well, cool. John, you were definitely, without a doubt, the most well traveled of this crew. You've been all over the place. You've been everywhere.
John's so where else
besides Skank? What else besides Skankway? Which you got a good story about?
He was in Bunghole, Mississippi. Bunghole, they called it. Bunghole.
This is a funny story. Years ago, I was in Atlanta when I was like 18. I went to this X-ray technician. I met this real redneck guy, and he goes, "Where are you from?" And I go like this. I'm from New York, Long Island. He goes, "New York, Long Island, your hometown?" And I go, no. I live in Seaford. He goes, wait, you live in Seaford, Long Island, New York? And I go, yeah, that's right. He goes, "You can't come from three places." So now I figure I'm going to screw this guy. He goes, "Where's Seaford near?" I go, "Near Hicksville."
There you go.
He goes, "This is God's honest truth." He goes, "Hicksville? Is that anywhere near Bug Tussle?"
Hicksville.
Because you can't make that stuff
I also
up.
Thought Hicksville was the weirdest name to be in New York.
I want to be from Buck Tussle, man. That's
not Buck Tussle, Bug Tussle.
Bug Tussle. Okay.
Was it Fuck Tussle? What?
he thought I said Fuck Tussle.
The only place in America where you can hear, "Damn, I wanted to borrow the teeth tonight."
Oh, man. You know, when we were talking to Steve, I had a boomer memory because I've been going through a lot of stuff. We may have talked about it. I don't know if we did. Maybe we didn't. But, well, Mike, you're probably too young. I have to say this. I'm barely there. Back in 1963, my dad loved to be like the guy on the block who had the newest thing. My dad went and bought this aluminum Christmas tree. Do you remember those? They were aluminum.
Oh,
and it had a color wheel that would spin.
Because you couldn't put lights on it or you'd get electrocuted.
I remember touching it. I remember as a kid, I was like three, I would touch it, I would get a shock. I did. But
It was made for people who wanted to get rid of their kids.
But do you remember those trees?
I totally remember that. My neighbor had them. I thought they were the most ugliest thing ever.
It was like an abomination, wasn't it? It was like
they didn't last long, I guess.
This is before you guys lived in Cali.
Back when you used to hang out with Napoleon?
When I hung out there. No, but I don't remember this. But my grandfather told me, because they didn't even have color pictures. But back when in Hollywood, at Christmas, you could buy a pink Christmas tree. Any color Christmas tree you wanted, they'd sprayed it.
Well, that was in Goodfellas.
People used to buy pink. Was it?
Really?
Yeah, in Goodfellas, honey comes home with a pink Christmas tree.
Oh, that's so funny. I remember.
Honey, I got the biggest tree.
So that tree was really flocked.
Flocked.
That was a flocked Christmas tree.
That tree was flocked up. And it's so flocked up.
I saw an 18-wheeler driving home from our meeting yesterday. That was painted all pink for breast cancer awareness.
Okay.
I thought that was really cool. The man had painted his whole truck, pink and you just, it was a funny sight because it's this big, tough looking guy like me, big truck driver, and he's driving a pink truck. And I thought, what's that? And then I saw, you know, breast cancer. So, okay, that's cool. We don't have to ring the bell on him.
No, no. Let me ask you, this is totally off the subject.
Ring.
Muted ring.
What's that?
Totally off the subject.
It's
have either
a,
you,
it's
have
a
you
muted got, ring.
Have either of you guys seen the movie Oppenheimer?
Yes.
Yes.
What'd you think?
I knew the ending before I saw it.
It was, yeah.
Do you want to know? You know what's weird is I saw the movie. I was saying this to my daughter Lindsay the other day. Is I can't remember. Remember, I used to go to movies, and you'd walk out of a movie and you go, "Man, that was incredible."
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
I can't remember the last movie that I walked out.
I do.
And said,
"What was incredible. It?"
Star Wars, the first Star Wars. Oh, I walked out of Star Wars 5 feet off the ground.
But that's what John's talking about. Back then, yes, because I remember walking out of Star Wars. I remember walking
Jaws.
Out of Saturday Night Fever. Saturday Night Fever.
I remember walking out of Goodfellas.
Remember the Wanderers. Remember the one I walked out of the
Don't
movie, the
fuck
Wanderers.
With the Wongs
or the Warriors, things like that. I'm ready
to get the gang
fight. I mean, I saw Oppenheimer, and you want to know something? If you ask me the next day, tell me a part of the movie that you really liked.
Man, John, thank you so much. I was so bored in that fucking movie.
You know what? It should have been.
I tried 2 days in a row watching. I'm like, it's shot great. It's shot great. It looks great. The performances are great, but I was bored out of my fucking mind.
And then you guys are too young to remember this, but I remember when movies were long, when they were like 3-hour movies.
Intermission.
There was always an intermission.
Let's go out to the lobby.
I know, but how can you expect to see? I mean, right now, even that Napoleon movie is 3 hours.
Yeah.
Right. And the Sun movie, I can never think of the name of that.
Yeah, well, you ever watch? You obviously watched
it.
It's a mad world.
Love that they fucking movie.
The movie, I have it on the DVD. It has it's got an intermission in it.
So does the Great Race. So does the Great Race. So does Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
This is a trivia question. Maybe I can beat Craig.
No way.
Movie that ever had an intermission.
What was that?
First movie that ever had an intermission.
The first movie, Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. Yep.
Gone with the Wind. Wow. And he knew that.
Well, I mean, it's one of the longest movies ever. Yeah. But no,
you want to know something funny?
Just back to Oppenheimer for a second. I'm watching this movie with high expectations. I love Christopher Nolan, but I'm like, how do you make the making of the world's first atomic bomb boring as fuck? How do you do that?
Because that's what they did. They made it about the creation of it and all of that and stuff. Because the real exciting, what I won't call exciting isn't quite the right word, but the interest of the atomic bomb is the effect that it had, not only on the people who it got dropped on, but the consciousness of the people who dropped
that
it.
That was interesting, but then it got involved into this whole, you know, political.
I like when all those idiots stood there and watched the bomb go off.
I know, really.
And melt.
You know, don't worry, the
don't
car
worry
will
about
protect
that wind
me.
Heading this way. That's not radiation or anything. You know.
I don't know. I just found the movie to be laborious to watch. I tried twice. I just can't get. I got.
Well, listen, it's got to be done the right way. It's like when you think about a movie. Like one of my favorite movies is Patton, and that's a really long movie. But it's interesting because it really goes about, you know, showing the characters and this and that. Oppenheimer, you say the lead character was kind of boring. They didn't write him, you know. It's like,
right, how about this? The Irishman, right?
Ugh.
Didn't
the Irishman,
it.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
That's another movie that had everyone in the movie who I like, Ray Romano,
yeah.
Robert De Niro, everyone. And I can't tell you one scene from them.
I only know one.
I remember the scene when De Niro and Ray are talking, because when he talked about it, you know, I brought up the, you know, I remember the scene, but I mean, it was just sort of like, you know, like Richard Gervais said at the Golden Globes, he goes, and I really enjoyed Scorsese's miniseries, The Irishman.
Yeah. But you know, and the other thing with Irishman is they de-aged everybody at one point. And it was so obvious that they were de-aged. I mean, they had 35-year-old looking faces and 70-looking hands, and they were walking like Tim Conway. It just took you out of the movie.
Well, I'll be honest, I can't remember a scene from Gone with the Wind because I never saw it, but that's besides the point.
You know, like Bronx Tales.
Love that movie.
Great movie.
Love that movie. I can remember every scene in that movie.
Yeah, me too.
Goodfellas, all of those. I remember. All of there was only one part of Goodfellas that I thought was a little. It was that whole thing with when he's like wasted on cocaine and his helicopter, and it's like a 10-minute scene of him kind of tripping on.
It was so
that,
great.
That was movie. Dead. It was actually to me that was Dead Space. It was like
I loved it.
I love that scene.
I love it because he gets all wired and
just showed you that total coked.
The doctor had mercy on me. He gave me a Valium and told me to go home and rest.
Even Raging Bull was a great movie.
Yeah. I'm so glad you guys agreed with me. You fuck my wife. I was sitting here going, is there something wrong with me? I should be into this is the movie
you're raving about. Anytime you're asking yourself, is there something wrong with me? The answer is yes.
Well, I know that, but I'm talking about in this case.
Yeah.
I'm like, this movie's going to win Best Picture. You know, it's going to win.
No,
it won't.
It's done. It's going to win.
Stoppenheimer?
Yeah.
What's it up against Barbie? Could you be more polar opposite than
Barbie's Barbie? Barbie, I hated Barbie.
I thought it was okay. It wasn't my
favorite
movie. It was
pretty good.
I didn't see it.
It was like cotton candy. It was done. As soon as it was done eating it, I was like, it just disappeared.
What I find funny? There's a moral lesson in it, right? There's like these Hollywood movies. Hollywood has the nerve to try to send the most immoral people in the world making movies about other people's morality. It's like, give me a break. You want to talk about sexist and race and all this stuff? It's nobody worse than the Hollywood elitist, and yet they try to make movies that say this is what you should do.
Oppenheimer, when I watched Oppenheimer, I was thinking, okay, this is Nolan. Shut up, my cat's meowing. I said, this is Nolan trying to get his Oscar.
Wow, that's cat abuse, man. What would Steve
I didn't
say,
shut up
man?
I didn't hit him.
That's abuse, man. You just tell him to shut up.
And are you like, okay?
Yeah, how are you feeling, Andy?
He just gave me the paw. Man? He just gave me the paw.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's just trying to get an Oscar, I think.
Is trying to get an Oscar?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. I just think that the movies now aren't as good as they used to be. I don't think that sounds sounds like something an old my dad would.
Again, like we were saying, John, there was less big money going around. So it was like they had to really studios and everyone had to really approve. They went through it. There was quality because
wait a minute. The Holdovers.
Quick funny story.
The Holdovers was a really good movie.
Yes. But four people will see it. It'll be like seen by four people, but it was a good movie.
It was a good movie. And John, have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't watched it yet. So my dad.
You don't want to see it?
I will see it.
Okay.
My dad, when my dad was started having dementia and stuff, and it was like I just like to get him out of the house, and I figure just take him to a movie. I don't care what it is, as long as it's loud, it's big, it's action, it'll keep his interest. So I took him to see the first Transformers movie. In the middle of the movie he just stands up and goes, "This is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life."
But did he like it?
But he was so confused by it. Like, cars turning into robots.
I can imagine being confused by it.
I'm into Transformers and I was confused by it.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to. Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, I remember the last movie I took my mom to. You know, you're not going to believe this because I took her to see Spider-Man 2. That's the one with Doc Ock. And she loved it.
Yeah.
So. I took my mom to see, the last movie I remember taking my mother to see was Arthur.
Oh.
Sir John Gielgud looked exactly like my grandfather.
Oh, man. I love Arthur. Like
one of the best movies of all time. Arthur.
I love Arthur.
Great movie.
If you get drunk in New York.
Arthur, take my hand. That would leave you with one.
Oh, yeah. There are three books.
I love them.
Back to the library.
Oh, God. And then he pulls up to the four hookers and goes, would one of the least offensive of you please get in the car?
Two yeah. hookers. John, you must have glasses, bad glasses, yes. or two.
You're a hooker? I thought I was doing great with you.
Oh, I love when he's telling his aunt about what country she's from. He goes, a really small country. They just had it recently carpeted. That we're talking very small.
And that movie got a lot of shit too, saying it was glorifying alcohol.
Not until much later, but yeah, it did. Yeah, that's why they remade it with Russell Brand. They kind of changed it.
Which was the worst ever.
People are just so full of shit.
How about when they take a really good movie and they make a remake of it? And
you mean like the Out of Towners?
No, the worst offense of
the in-laws.
The in-laws.
Oh boy!
So the in-laws, the original in-laws, right through the entire movie, you don't know whether Peter Falk is nuts or not, right? You don't know. In the new movie, and that's what makes it funny, because when he calls to report him, he gets all these things. Oh yeah, we had to let him go. He's crazy. Everyone he ever worked with got killed, right? And then in the new movie, in the very beginning, the opening phone call. They go, oh, yeah, yeah, he no longer works for us.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's because they don't give the audience today any credit. They think the audience is stupid. And in part, they're kind of right. You know,
look at CSI or all those shows. Not only does the guy get shot, you got to see the bullet entering through the first layer of skin, bouncing off the bone, right? You got to see all this stuff. Like, yeah, he just got shot, you know?
Yeah.
So funny.
Well, I mean, the whole thing. Now they cast two really good people in the remake of The In-Laws. You had Albert Brooks, who's great,
right.
And you have Michael Douglas, who's won an Oscar. But they just didn't have the same chemistry as Peter Falk and Alan Arkin. It just doesn't work.
So no? That's one of the that's one of the funniest movies ever.
Tell me any remake.
Serpentine, Sheldon.
Tell me any remake that was better than the original. There's no such thing.
Sure, there is.
A remake that was better than the original?
I thought of one right away.
What? All right, let's hear it.
Judy Garland's A Star Is Born over Johnny Gaynor's.
Jeez, dear, would you?
What the frig is talking about this now? Yeah.
You're so stereotypical.
I'll bleep that out.
Judy Garland's name.
Yeah.
Double down.
Come on. That was a really good. And also, the Bradley Cooper version was really good, too.
Yes. Now, let me ask you a question. Because I don't really, you know, I don't really remember the first 16 of those movies. Was the story very different, the Bradley Cooper version?
Well, yes, in one respect.
I like the Kris Kristofferson version.
Well, no, the reason why I'm asking is because he gets writing credit in that movie.
Well, with dialogue and stuff like that, yeah.
Well, because he also sang, too.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, he gets like book credit, you know, like if that was a play.
You're writing the screenplay, that would be a book.
Yeah.
But well, the thing is, you know, you want to hear the biggest wasted opportunity ever. Back in 76, when they did A Star Is Born, they did it with Barbara Streisand, you know, of course, and it was Kris Kristofferson. But Kris Kristofferson was their second choice. They offered that role to Elvis. Can you imagine if friggin' Elvis did that?
It would have been a bomb.
You think so?
Elvis was fluffy. He was like not a serious actor. You know what I mean?
Remember Eddie Murphy used to do that? He was the worst Elvis was the worst actor in the history of show business. In fact, anytime he had to do a line, he had to sing it. I'm going to drive my car around the track.
Lemonade.
I think
it would be a cool, refreshing drink.
I still would have. I still would have liked to have seen him try because it mirrored his career at that point.
He didn't have the chops that Chris Christopherson was.
Yeah, I guess maybe, but I still would have liked to have seen
the sexiest Elvis scene ever, which I just saw the other day again, is he's underneath the car. I think it was Viva Las
Vegas. Bring the bell on yourself, Speedway. John.
No, Speedway. Yeah, maybe it's Speedway. He's underneath the car, and Ann Margaret walks in and these tight white shorts driving a Triumph TR4A. And the guys just slide out from underneath. And she's got these little shorts, and they go, "What's the matter?" And she goes, "My car is going ting, ting, ting." And Elvis goes, "When it goes ting, ting, it's the sweetest thing." But she looks so beautiful in it.
Oh, yeah. She's gorgeous.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Well, those old stars that this is pre surgery, just go pre modern filters and makeup and all. Well, I mean, they had makeup, but like, you know, come on, Sophia. Who's the most beautiful starlet of all time, do you think?
Oh, that's a tough one.
It's a tough question because there's like three or four that pop in. I love Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn's up there. I was thinking of her, but
yeah,
I was thinking of Anthony.
Sophia Loren, you know, but there was a few.
You
got to have categories for that. You can't just answer that because there's yes. Which is the sexiest, which is the prettiest, which is the, you know.
For sheer beauty, it's got to be either Audrey Hepburn or Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah. I'll go along with you there. And I'd still go with Audrey Hepburn. I just think she is just the, as you would say, the cat's meow.
See, as a gay man, I can't answer that question.
And Margot Robbie is one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Oh, by far.
Absolutely.
She almost made me change sides. Seriously. That scene, in the Wolf of Wall Street.
Once you go to the dark side, you have to stay on the dark.
Well, that scene in the Wolf of Wall Street when she's opening her leg.
Oh, my God.
Holy crap.
You know what? I've got to rewatch the Wolf of Wall Street now.
Oh, my God. That's a great movie.
It's the hottest scene ever in a movie. Yeah.
That's probably my favorite Scorsese film.
Look, we're talking about movies. That's a movie that you remember so many times.
I love that movie. Remember the scene when the Quaaludes hit? Oh, my God. It's one of the funniest.
I got home pretty safe.
Scorsese can do comedy, man. That was one of the fun. I was roaring during that scene.
There's nothing left of the car except for the
hang mirror. Of the phone.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How are we doing on time? Just out of curiosity.
We have about 5 minutes.
Yeah, wow.
5 minutes. Let's get serious now.
Let's get serious. Give to St. Jude. There's kids out there that need your money.
Oh, man. Don't do that.
Well, it's that time of year, man. All the commercials are for the Shriners or for St. Jude's, and I'm all for that. I give money to St. Jude's every year.
I got to tell you, man, I watch the game
but
show.
But then I feel guilty, though, that I don't give to the Shriners. So I feel like shit. So it's like I'm helping these kids.
Money in their little go-karts.
I'm watching the Game Show Network, and they have the commercial for the Shriners, every commercial, and this commercial comes on. I'll be home for Christmas, and they're all singing, and I give money immediately, but I do put a note for singing lessons when I send it.
That's nice. Let's make fun of disabled children. That's good, Craig. You've got a real
disabled children
future with
they just there can't sing.
Yeah, poor little Billy.
But I'm really jealous. Those kids, though.
I see.
No, look at those kids. Those kids. So, I mean, I don't. They're really good at spokespeople. I'm like, I couldn't do that. I wouldn't be that good.
That little blonde kid with the bow tie.
What the hell? He's so good.
He's so cute.
They break my heart every time I see those commercials. Oh. You're right. It's like how, you know.
But they can't sing. I'm sorry, they just can't.
The Shriners, man, are really cool. Like every time they have parades, They all have their go-karts and stuff, and they're made up like airplanes and fire trucks.
And you gotta love those hats. Come on, man.
Yeah, wear the fez.
They must be some brave bastards to walk around wearing them hats.
I love the commercial when he introduces his family, and it's everybody from the Shriners Hospital. And he goes, and my Shriner? And the guy with that hat walks in. I'm sorry. That's pretty cool. That's pretty funny when he does that.
Come on. It's Shriner? 2023, man. Fucking redesign your hats, man. Come on.
Oh, those fences are cool.
They're cool. They're cool if you're living in Morocco in 1925. Okay, that's cool.
The Road to Morocco is a great
that's
movie.
Where they came from. That's probably where they came from.
I know, really.
What does a Shriner actually mean? Let me look it up.
Well, it's Will Shriner's family, isn't it? It's Will Shriner. No,
it's...
It goes way back past that.
I don't know what a Shriner is. I really don't know. I just know that
I would assume it's like
religious organization.
I don't know what
I'd
it is.
I'd probably be wrong. I don't know.
John's finding out. He's on his smartphone
Wait,
right
hold
now.
Hold on. Do, 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 do,
what
do,
does Shriner mean? It's a member of the ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the Mystic.
There you go. Shrine. Arabic. Okay.
A charitable site founded in 1872. The festival parade might reel with the pipe bands and Shriners.
Okay.
Wow.
Is that like the Mormons?
Shriners believe in God. Shriners believe in God and that he created man to serve his purposes, among which to service to others in his name. We believe that the care for the less fortunate, especially children who suffer from burns, crippling diseases, or...
Oh, well, that's good. It's good that they're there.
No, God bless them. Hey, you know what, man? God bless all these organizations. If the money actually goes to what it's supposed to go to, you know, then I say it's terrific. You know what I mean? I can't stand. There's always been scandals. Like, I don't know that I've heard things about the Salvation Army and several other things that the money, you know, goes up. It's only a percentage of it gets to where it's supposed. Now, I'm not accusing them of anything because I don't know. These are just things I've heard.
From what I understand, all of the Shriner money goes to them.
Please send your cards and letters to Don't Cancel Mike at P.O. Box. I have a bone to pick against the Salvation Army only because I've heard that, you know, they're not heard, but I've seen it demonstrated that they're very anti-LGBTQ. So.
Oh, that's the Salvation.
That's why they're ringing those bells.
Yeah.
You can tell
my bell idea.
You can tell that they're anti-LGBTQ and that the gay people don't like them by the way they're dressed. You can tell that if gay people were into that, they'd be dressed much nicer. Seriously, they would be.
they'd have Perry Ellis Santa suits.
Yes. Oh, that'd be nice. That'd be special. I'd like
that. Instead of, you know, it'd be Calvin Klein. Calvin Klein, book you by Calvin Klein, Santa suit by Calvin Klein.
Okay. Well, on that happy note.
That was a happy note.
It was.
There you go.
Our next show is going to be our Christmas show and New Year's show, I think, isn't it? Aren't we doing both?
We're going to combine it. It's going to be like we discount Christmas, New Year's.
Christmas and New Year's.
The Sister's Ass show.
All right, now right back down to the lower rung. We just fell right.
You fly home tomorrow, right, Mike?
Yeah. Going home mañana, and then home for like a week, and then New York for Christmas.
New York.
Cool. That's it.
And me, I'm just gonna sit here with my cat.
And then poor little dude got to be alone.
No, actually, I have we have a dog sitter. Dude's right now with her, and then when we leave, she comes and man, dude, I just couldn't stand putting him in a kennel or nothing like that.
Yeah,
I have a friend.
When I got home yesterday, because I was gone 12 hours.
I have a friend who's dog sitting over Christmas for 8 days. He's in this beautiful, beautiful like mansion up in the Hollywood Hills, taking care of these two dogs. He gets to eat whatever he wants. Uses their cable, whatever, and he's going to get like $2,000 for it too.
Wow! I hope they're using farmer dog. Is that he's eating the farmer dog? He gets to eat whatever he wants, as long as it's dog food.
Yeah. Oh my God! All right, John, take it home.
All right, man.
You got to own a farm. You have to own a farm to afford to give your dog that food.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, my dog eats farmer dog, man, because you know what? Nothing's too good for my dude.
Is it expensive? I heard it was really expensive.
It's not cheap. Yeah, it's kind of expensive, but you know, he's like I mix it with other stuff. I stretch it as far as I can, you know, like but the stuff I'm mixing it with is just as expensive. I buy like a whole cooked chicken and I mix some of it. So you can't win, you know what? He's a spoiled dog. What are you gonna do? If I don't give him the good stuff, he looks at me like, you know, you sleep, I'm awake.
Greg's laughing. We started the conversation.
Yeah, you're doing this mystic thing.
All right, get us out of here.
All righty. Well, it's Christmas season. Fa-la-la.
First of all, thanks to Steve Fisher for being on the show.
How come Mike brought this up yesterday at lunch? How come our straight man on the show is gay?
What do you mean, straight? I'm a straight man. Well, I thanks for the compliment. I think I'm pretty butch, you know, one of those things.
Okay, the only show where the straight guy is gay.
Well, you know, because I'm very regimented because my OCD. Plus, I used to be on radio. When it's time to leave, it's time to leave. You guys,
all right, time to leave.
But wait, thanks to Steve Fisher.
There's just so much love here that we hate to break the love bond.
That's true. Thanks to Steve Fisher for being on our show. Remember, get his book at AmericanBoomer.com. Remember, AmericanBoomerBook.com.
Right.
There's the plug. There you go.
All right. Well, let's say goodbye, everyone, and let's keep your shopping going. Christmas is around the corner. And let's thank Craig Mitchell.
Thank you.
My grief. I'm John
It's
Fertino.
Been awesome for you guys.
We will see you next week. Peace out.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.